week has been about Cassie Sainsbury and her situation over there in Colombia, where she's facing a prison sentence. There was all the cocaine that was allegedly in those headphone bags. I still throw the word allegedly around because I'm never comfortable. We were talking about this the other day, Fev, and yeah, it didn't look good for her. And let's be honest, it's not looking good for her.
No, it's not. And I thought, nah, she's innocent. But now, a couple of days in, Sherlock Holmes has done the detective work, and I think she is a gone.
Well, you know, allegedly. Whatever happens, it looks tough. And we thought, what would that be like? And I think a lot of people this week have thought about their kids or their family members if they are in this situation. What would that be like? Because it looks terrifying. It looks scary being in a South American jail and in a prison. And we're very lucky at the moment. We're joined by an Australian-born writer. You may know his book, Marching Powder. He lives an incredible life. He lives in Colombia at the moment where he teaches English. But he has spent time in a Bolivian prison over there, knows firsthand what it's like. Welcome to the show, Rusty Young.
Good morning. How are you?
Rusty, we're great, and we're really excited to talk to you because this is the kind of thing you watch in Prison Break, you watch movies, you see on the news, you think that would be a living hell in that prison. Rusty, what would it be or what will it be like for Cassie Sainsbury in there?
Yeah, obviously there's the initial shock of being caught and accused. The prison that she's in is called El Buen Pastor, which means the Good Shepherd. It's pretty close to the centre of Bogota. The main thing she's facing in terms of obstacles is obviously not speaking the language, being far from family and friends. She does have some consular assistance, but the Australian government is obviously limited in how much help it can give. It can give humanitarian aid, but the Australian representatives there from the consulate can't interfere with the exercise of the Colombian judicial system. So, horrific situation to be in. The prison itself was designed to house 1,200 people, and I believe there are now 2,000 inmates in there, so it's a lot of overcrowding. I believe that she would be quite safe. They're very mindful of the safety and security of foreign prisoners, and there's a separate section in the women's prison for foreigners, so obviously very distressing for her, very distressing situation for her family and friends back in Australia, and some big unknowns in terms of the outcome of her case.
Now, Rusty, if she takes the guilty plea and gets the 2 or 4 years, which they're saying that she'll get, is it all, when you're in there, is it all about how much money you have back home so you can bribe the prison staff? You get, you know, I've watched a lot of movies about Pablo Escobar and all that sort of stuff, but they seem to buy their way, buy their food, get little treats and stuff the more money they have. Is that correct?
Yeah, the conditions in all prisons in South America are fairly basic, and obviously if you have money you can buy certain privileges. Obviously the government provides basic food and shelter and basic medical treatment, but you know obviously you still have lots of other expenses as a prisoner. So it's not just about bribing the guards. It's also just about having enough money to buy clothes and medicine and things like that.
Well, I know, Rusty, you bribed the guards to allow them to get you to stay there for 3 months. You were in there. Was it terrifying? Were there moments when, you know, was it life-threatening? What happened?
Yeah, that was in Bolivia, not in Colombia. There were some scary moments. A few people died, got stabbed. Probably the scariest thing with the people who were smoking cocaine base, which is very similar to crack cocaine, and once they run out, then they become extremely agitated and desperate for the next hit. So, and there are no police actually inside the prison. The prisoners run that place themselves. So there was some danger, but you just got to know how to handle the situation.
So when you're in there for the first couple of weeks, I'm going to go back to the bribing. Do they push you, the guards, and threaten you, thinking that you do have money because you're a foreigner, or do they just treat you normally from day one?
Yeah, look, I think there's a general assumption that all Westerners are rich. So both the prisoners and the guards assume that you have lots of money, which is not always the case, particularly for young travellers. But look, the Colombian system is different. The Bolivian system is far more corrupt. I spent, as I said, 8 years living in Colombia and researching my next book, Colombiano, and I have interviewed and spent a lot of time with the anti-narcotics police there and the CTI, which is the public prosecutor investigative unit. And So basically, the Colombian system is nowhere near as corrupt as the Bolivian system.
Now, Rusty, we believe you also have some news and update on this developing story about Cassie Sainsbury.
Yeah, in the last 24 hours, a Spanish language interview with Carlos Carlin, a Colombian-born Australian journalist, he interviewed the head of the ports and airports in Colombia. Now, he was the man who was in charge of the operation that netted Cassandra Sainsbury. The reports in the Australian media have been that the reason that she was caught was because of the ticket bought only hours before takeoff. But in fact, Colombian authorities had been warned by another police intelligence agency in Colombia that there was a passenger who was going to travel on the 5th of April. So that's 1 week before she was actually caught. And the particular agency in question provided her name, passport number, and photograph. So the Colombian authorities were on the lookout for her at all airports inside Colombia as of the 5th of April.
So in saying that, the way I look at it when you watch all the movies and you see other people get caught, well, she a scapegoat? So they've given her, say, 6 kilos of cocaine, but they've got another passenger that's carrying 20. Let them through, and she's the fool girl, so everyone goes to her. Do you reckon that's what's happened?
I don't want to speculate. That can happen. To my mind, this is definitely not a Colombian-led operation. It's not very sophisticated. Colombian drug traffickers are a lot smarter. They certainly wouldn't try and run a mule through with 6 kilograms through the major airport. There's certainly no cartels behind this operation. The cartels don't run drug mules. They run tons of cocaine. To my mind, this looks like a very small and unsophisticated operation organised by people outside of Colombia.
Well, Rusty, thank you so much for that insight, and we'll keep our eye on this developing story. But, fascinating, Rusty.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
His book is Marching Powder, and by the way, there is a screenplay, a film adaptation that is, it's very exciting. Brad Pitt's Plan B Entertainment production company is behind it, so we stand by for that in the future. Rusty Young, thanks for joining us.
Fifi, Dave, Fev and Byron.
Now, we were just talking to Rusty Graham, who has been in and spent time in a South American jail and knows firsthand what Cassie Sainsbury is facing. Now, a lot's happened over the week. We started the week when we found out about this story, Fev, and you were like, she's innocent, the poor thing's been set up.
She's proven guilty.
But over the last few days, whoo, I don't want to cast my opinion in case any of her relatives sue me, but it's not looking good. And she's in a bind over there because she now faces a quandary that a lot of people face when they are facing the judicial system in whatever country they're in. Do I plead guilty and take a lesser sentence, or really try to prove my innocence and possibly end up with the higher sentence there is? So in this case for her, whatever her status is, she pleads guilty. She could be in there for as little as 2 years. She pleads innocent and goes through the 1.5 year trial. They could hit her with the full 25. Now, it's an interesting one, Fev, because we were talking about this and we said, but what if you were innocent? So let's not talk about Cassie now because that's not looking
good.
We don't know. So think about this. You're innocent. You've gone through this Colombian thing. You've had people put stuff in your bags and you did nothing, Fev. You're an innocent man. What are you going to do?
Ooh.
Turn your phone on silent for starters.
If I'm innocent.
They don't like that.
That come out of my pocket. Tim James is filling in anyway. I would, if this was me, and I'm going to do both sides.
Let's do the hypothetical, though, being innocent.
Yeah, hypothetical.
You're innocent.
Yeah, I've gone over, so I'm a daredevil. I'm in debt. I'm going to try to get the thing out through to get money.
Innocent.
But now I'm innocent. I didn't do it.
Yep.
They put drugs in my bag.
Yep.
I've been caught. I will not sit in a jail for 25 years knowing that I didn't do it. I'll just say, yep, did it, out in 2 years, bang, back on the streets of Adelaide, cruising around.
High five, my friend. Couldn't agree with you more.
Oh, hang on, though.
There is no room to be a martyr. If you're in it, even if I was innocent and I knew I hadn't done it, there is no way I'm sitting in jail for 25 years sleeping because my principles are
intact. At the age of 22.
You just have to take two years and then go, now I've got the rest of my life ahead of me.
And she's over there on an international trip because she works for a multinational cleaning business. If you're in a jail in Bogota, give it a bit of Windex.
clean it down. A couple of years in there, big guy.
Hang on. Thief and Fev, you're out on the streets again and everyone goes, oh, there's the guilty drug trafficker.
Who cares? No.
There's the smuggler.
Would you rather be in a jail for 25 years and go, I hate myself.
Oh, you'd sleep well at night in that jail knowing you didn't do it.
You don't sleep well, though.
No, you wouldn't sleep well.
You don't sleep well in that room.
Especially not me. Look how gorgeous I am. I would not be sleeping well.
Think about it, Byron, though. To that point you just made, though, that's fine. If you've got a problem walking down the street and having people point at you and think that's the drug smuggler, you're in a jail where no one gets to point at you. I'd rather I was at least around people that thought I was a criminal, knowing that I'm breathing fresh oxygen and my life's not in danger.
I'll give you a hypothetical feat.
Yeah.
Byron and I, at the end of the year, go to Colombia. We get drugs put in our bag.
A nightmare.
You say I'm innocent. I go, well, I'm innocent too, but I'll take the 2 years. You're in there for 25. I'm back at the beach having a sunbank. What about me, mate Byron? Still in jail.
But hang
what
on.
An idiot.
I'm going to pose. Yeah, but Fev, you've been very selfish then. Who's Byron going to bath with if you're not there?
Fifi, Dave, Fev and Byron.
I reckon Buckingham Palace learned a little lesson yesterday. Let's not fly people in from interstate or overseas for a secret squirrel meeting first thing in the morning. So we give everyone about 8 hours of speculation. My favourite part about what happened yesterday, and I think we all know how it played out, was the photo captured of the Queen Elizabeth and some of her mates peeking behind the curtain going,
the best.
Why are there thousands of journos outside? And this is how it played out for me yesterday. I was heading off to the project and I got a call from Sonda, our executive producer, and said to me, this is the phone call, get ready, Fee, because Prince Philip's died. Whoa, what? Hang on a second, Son, what do you mean? She goes, look, it's not confirmed. Now, I'm guessing every news outlet around the world had that conversation. And then when we were at the project, we're in the meetings going, just waiting. I wonder how poor Phil, as he wakes up, alive and well, healthy as he's ever been at 96, to think, oh, they had all my eulogies ready. They'd written me off. They thought I was dead.
Well, at least he knows everyone cares. So he'd be sitting in his chair having his scotch and cigar.
That's true. You can never be there at your own funeral, can you? So, I mean,
unless you fake death. But the best meme I saw, guys, was Prince Harry sitting next to his grandma and he's done a boom, you know, the big boom, like you've dropped a big bomb, boom.
Yeah.
And it says, when your grandma trolls Twitter.
She's got it.
Boom, like she's ruling the world.
So, I mean, realistically, like he said, I'm going to retire, which is, thank God, mate, because, you know, obviously you had so much on your plate from doing
what?
I don't know what you're retiring from. I mean, sitting around and waving at people, and it is getting on top of me.
Well, he really has.
He's retired at 96, Dave. I tried that at 29. Retired. Went broke, had to work again. I'm 70 years behind him.
And you pulled it in.
And I have to go back to work. But he's done the right thing, 96.
Jesus, and talk about the world we live in. He's like, nah, missus is still working. This boy's sitting here, but she's on it.
Fifi, Dave, Fev and Byron.
Jordan Lewis, who was a four-time premiership player at Hawthorn, playing against his old side on Sunday.
This Sunday.
And he's a club champion, he was a vice captain of Hawthorn last year.
Yes, and now he plays for
Melbourne. He's gone across and I heard an interview during the week when he said, Dave, it's pretty similar to what you go through in a grand final. It's the unknown, you don't know what it is. And it took me back to when I got delisted, traded, left to Brisbane from Carlton. And we played a practice game down in Melbourne. I thought, oh, practice game, that's all right. I'll get down there. And the old fans and that, they all rocked up. And that was pretty. It was a practice game. And I was lucky enough, Brisbane played Carlton round two at the Gabba. And I thought, that's all right. It's at the Gabba. It's in Queensland. We've got my fans there. They're all at Brisbane. They'll be all behind me. And when I was rocking up to the game, there was a certain number of Carlton supporters that had half Carlton, half Brisbane jumper. And I thought that made me feel good.
Yeah.
I'm up and about.
That's amazing. That wouldn't have happened much before.
No, I don't think it would have happened. But then later on in the year, guys, we're playing Carlton at Etihad Stadium. And I did not know what to think throughout the week. And I'll throw it to you, Fief. It'd be like you go into last year's grand final with your dad, massive Bulldog supporters, and you go, I'm just going to barrack for Sydney from now on.
So wearing full Sydney kit, the scarf.
Supporting.
No.
You can't do it.
And you'd be sitting next to me.
Can't do it.
You just can't do it. And Dave, if you were going to, you're a Hawthorn supporter and then you went and sat when you played Geelong in the grand final, you're supporting Geelong, you have to back for Hawthorn.
Mate, it's honestly, the way that you're describing it, it's like I'm sitting with Nick's and then they just go, oh, you're on the same table with your ex. Oh, I don't want to be here.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So so go back there. So you've gone, you're in Melbourne again.
We're playing
in Melbourne.
You're
about to play Carlton. You know all those fans love you.
Well, they did.
Oh, so what happened?
Well, I didn't play.
What do you mean you didn't play?
Yeah, I didn't play.
Did you pull out?
Oh, I had sore groins.
Did you?
So I wasn't allowed to fly, so I sort of didn't play.
Did you pretend you had sore groins?
I'm not insinuating that at all, Fifi, but I didn't play. I didn't actually get to play against my opposition, which was my
club.
Against
Carlton.
Yeah. My club for 12 years that I love and all my teammates in Carlton against all the supporters that used to cheer me on because I had sore dollar coins. Yeah.
What do you do there, mate?
Oh, I just iced up, had a couple of frothies, watched them on the TV. They got rolled and then I went back to training on Monday.
Fifi, Dave, Fev and Byron.
We have so many lovely people that listen to this radio show, listen to The Fox and write in. And Fev, I want to share with you this gorgeous letter or email or text that was sent to you. This is so lovely. This is from a mother called Shamila. Now she said, hey Fev, my son has grown up loving you and still loves you so much. He listens to you every day. He still has your kid's footy book. That's something to hang on to. He has a school interview to do and wanted to know if he could ask you a few questions. This would make his world. Thank you so much. Now what a great mum for contacting you direct.
Yeah, she sent that via Instagram. So I brought it to our producer Sonda's attention and look now, I'm under the grill.
I know. So what's happened is now Nate, he's currently in year 9 at Heatherton Christian College. This is a beautiful photo too that we put up on Instagram yesterday and you can go and check it out. It was Fev meeting Nate and his brother when he was like, oh, what does he look like there, 4, 5 or 6?
He's young.
He's been a big fan of yours for a long time. Now, as part of this Year 9 challenge, the kids have been set this school project. Now, believe it or not, Nate, from Heatherton Christian College, he is about to interview Fev one-on-one live on radio. And can I say, I don't think anyone's had the chance to do this because you rarely do no-holds-barred interview. Even the footy show, you would say you can't ask about this, you can't ask about this, you can't.
And
you said Nate can ask you anything.
Anything. And I did do an interview yesterday for our show for Alice Costa for
Herald Sun.
Not nervous. Just played the Ricky Ponting straight bat to a lot of questions. I'm very nervous here.
Well, let's meet the George Negus, the Ray Martin of the moment. Nate, hello.
Hello.
Hey, Nate, you're 14. Yeah, hanging out in Year 9 at Heatherton Christian College, and now you are on the Fox Breakfast Show, about to go one-on-one with your idol, your hero, Brendan Favola. Say hi to Fev, Nate.
Hey, Fev, how are you?
G'day, Nate. How are you, man?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Just be very lenient towards me, mate. Take it easy. I'm a little bit nervous.
So I'll try.
Okay, so sit tight. We're going to play a song, and we're going to come back with this exclusive one-on-one.
And you know, Nate, you can ask him anything.
Don't listen to Fifi.
Fifi, Dave, Fev and Byron.
We're joined now by Nate from Heatherton Christian College. Are you there, Nate?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Right. Oh, Nate, you're in year 9. You're all of 14. Fev has been your hero your whole life. You're a massive Carlton fan. You said when you were given a school project, what I would love more than anything is to interview Brendan Favola. And Nate, you're about to do what many never get the chance to do.
And usually when you do an interview, Fifi, you get a little rundown of the questions that you get asked. Yeah, not in this case.
Now, yeah, and Nate, he's got an asking rate, so I don't know how many zeros you're going to put on that check. But,
Now, all your friends are listening from Heatherton Christian College, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Nate, now, this is your big moment. Now, Byron, Dave and I, we're going to step away from the microphones. You are essentially one-on-one with Brendan Favola to ask whatever you want, okay?
Okay.
Are you all set for your school project, your Year 9 school project, Nate?
Let's go, mate.
Good luck.
You've heard of Parkinson, Denton, Grimshaw. Well, this guy trumps them all. Introducing 14-year-old Nate Raymond. Nate interviews Fev for his school project. If hard-hitting journalism is your cup of tea, Nate's about to make a whole bucket of tea. Nate will crack Fev wide open. Nate Raymond.
All Okay, Nate, let's go, buddy. Question one.
All right, before I start, I just want to say thanks so much for doing this, Fev. I remember when I was small, sitting up on the MCG stands, yelling your name when you kick goals, and at family clinics, just meeting you. It was just the best thing ever. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for ringing in. Play a song, Byron.
Okay, so our hypothesis for our group is Melbourne has the best arts and entertainment in Melbourne, in Australia. So my first question is, do you think Melbourne has the best variety of sport and entertainment?
Well, I thought, but it was whatever you said.
Hypothesis.
Then. Yes, you lost me there, big boy. But yes, we're the capital, sporting capital of the world. We've got in our precinct in the city, we've got the MCG, we've got Amy Park, we've got the Collingwood's got their stuff there. We've got Rich, we've got Punt Road. You've got the tennis centre, Rod Laver, where the tennis is played. By far the number one sporting capital, not just in Australia, but the world.
All right, cool. And the second thing is, you played footy for a long time in the AFL, and there were so many great things that you did. So I want to know, what was your best highlight from your footy career?
My greatest highlight was playing my first game. I didn't get a kick, I got a handball, but when you run out in front of 90,000, we played Collingwood, they play each other again on the weekend. That feeling you get in your body when you run out and the song comes on, you can't really explain it to someone that hasn't done it, so... that was probably my greatest moment in your family, and it's best for your family because Mum and Dad, especially Mum, gave up a lot for me to play footy, and to see her face when I ran out is pretty special. But I take it back to Adelaide, when we played Adelaide on the game where we lost by 130 points against St Kilda the week before, and we came back. It was Wayne Carey's 250th, actually. And I kicked a goal from about 80 metres out on the boundary line to win the game. That's probably number one.
Awesome. My third question is,
are you okay now?
You there, mate?
Oh, you're kidding if the phone's cut out.
Oh, no. This never happens to Parkinson.
No.
You there, buddy?
You there, Nate?
I'll just put him on hold and bring him back.
Okay, I can fill in for Nate now. Who's your favourite co-host on air? Who just...
Hey, Nate, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, buddy.
Cool. All professional athletes in professional sport, they have to make sacrifices in order to do what they love. So I want to ask you, what was the biggest sacrifice you had to make in order to play the game of footy?
That's a very good question, Nate. I'd like to have fun off the field. But the thing that I found most, because I got drafted at 17, so I was, my next year in footy, I was playing AFL but also doing my VCE, which was very hard to juggle. And because of that, there was a lot of 18ths, 21sts that I couldn't attend because I had footy the next day or had footy, I was interstate, and all your mates are going to a party and they're having fun and they talk about it at school the next day on a Monday, and I didn't get to experience that. So you sort of lose your friendship circle because you become involved in the bubble in footy. So that's one thing that I really missed, but obviously I was doing something that I love, so you can't have your cake and eat it too. So I just had a little bit of a slice of the cake and I got to play footy, which was great.
That's really cool. But my fourth question is, what is your hobby other than footy?
My hobby? Well, I have three kids, so that's a job. But I love to play with my kids. My kids play sport. I like to go watch them play sport. I still play footy. I go out and play local footy. I love playing PlayStation, so I think you'd be a PlayStation boy. I'm on Grand Theft Auto at the moment, the new one. It's an amazing game. And I'll swap between 2K17 basketball, where I'm playing myself, and I'm actually playing for the Utah Jazz, and I've just become a starter. So, yeah, that's a hobby.
And eating.
And eating's a real good hobby of mine. Thanks, Dave.
2K17.
Fifth and final question, Nate. This is your last question.
Definitely the final.
Come on, let's go.
Because I'm really obsessed about the NBA, and every time a great player retires, they tend to write a letter to a younger self. So I just want to ask you, this is a really big question that I really want to ask you, is if you had a chance to write a letter to your 17-year-old self, what would you write?
It's a really good question. if I was a 17-year-old kid right now and I'd lived the life that I've lived, I would tell myself to appreciate what you've got, because when you lose it, you appreciate how much you loved what you did, and don't get involved in the bubble, which is footy. And I'd tell myself never, ever, ever to gamble, because that wrecked my life for a time being where I was doing that, and also my family's life. So I'd tell myself to stay clear of the TAB, because it's an addictive drug, it is, and that sort of derailed me for a little bit. So I'd probably say that, and everything else, I had fun. So that'd be the main thing that I told myself.
I was going to say, thank you so much for doing this. And I know that you started the race off not the greatest for many people, but it's the way you finish it, and you've been doing it really well, and you've been inspiring people that have been doing this. You've been inspiring them. They're able to change their life, and you're being inspiring me. Even if I go through hardships, I'll be able to change it around, and I'll be able to strive for excellence.
Mate, thank you very much.
Oh,
and do you know what, buddy? If you don't get an A+, I'm coming down to your school and I'm going to have a little chat to your teacher.
Nate, you did a brilliant job. You just brought tears to our eyes. That is so, you should be so proud of yourself. So should your mum and all your mates. You did great, Nate.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, what a beautiful
Pete
boy.
Overton, get out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
Fifi, Dave, Fev and Byron.
Now, we were all last night on tenterhooks watching the news thinking, what is this announcement from Buckingham Palace? There was speculation maybe someone had passed away. Then much relief. And I've got to say, personal relief. I'm a fan of the Queen and Prince Philip. I think they're old school. I love them being around. And I was personally very relieved. And look, Prince Philip's a funny one, isn't he? He has gone and retired at 95. And he's like, can we all be honest, he's like all of our grandfathers or our great-grandfathers in some cases.
It's a dark day for comedy.
Because
he used to give us so much stuff.
And the thing is, he's old school. Prince Philip, and let's celebrate his 95 years of working, well, not necessarily working, cutting ribbons, shaking hands, waving to the masses. Let's celebrate it by celebrating some of the most memorable Prince Philip moments over his tenure as a serving royal.
His greatest hits.
Yes, his greatest hits.
I always feel like, as the Queen's got to visit the Commonwealth and beyond, I feel like Prince Philip always made sure she had to come back again just to go, sorry about him.
Yeah.
remember a couple of years ago when he said that stuff?
The damage control tour.
It's so true. That is so true. Okay, I'm going to go back to 1981. This was just a fun one.
Hey, that was your my birthday.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Oh, that's why she must have been over.
Yeah, probably.
It was during the recession. For people who lived through that time, there was an awful recession. Unemployment rose. People couldn't get a job. And he said publicly, everybody was saying we must have more leisure, and now they're complaining about being unemployed. I mean, he's amazing. I'm so nervous about this because I'm doing this chronologically. So this was 1986, and I think I need to remind you, remember, and some people still have grandparents that aren't necessarily PC.
Just chronologically.
I'm so nervous. I don't know if I can say this, genuinely.
Well, they're his words.
They're his words. This is the Prince Philip said this. While visiting a British student in China, so he was in China.
This is not going well. This is not going. I know it's not your words. Can you clean them up at all?
Don't worry, people are very litigious.
So he's in China and he's met a British student and he said, if you stay here much longer.
Oh, no.
You'll go home with slitty eyes.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Hey, can we say this, though?
Can you say that out loud?
Can we also just point out, this guy didn't get fired. He got to retire. And no one pushed him away.
That one is so obnoxiously, horribly racist. I have to keep going to distance myself from it. In 2001, he said to a 13-year-old boy at a school who expressed his dreams of becoming an astronaut, you're too fat to be an astronaut. I mean, for bluntness, he's one of the best. He then said during an Elton John Royal Variety performance.
No.
So Elton John puts on an actual performance at the Royal Albert Hall for Prince Philip and his wife. Prince Philip was heard saying, I wish they'd turn his microphone off. Okay, guys, it continues.
Same could be said about him.
2002, he was speaking to a teenager. He was speaking about this teenage army cadet who'd been blinded in an IRA bombing.
No. Oh, jeez.
No.
He did. He said the 15-year-old was there. He's in his suit and tie. And somebody was asking how much sight he had left after this bombing. And the Duke said, not a lot, judging by his tie. That same year.
You ripped. Oh.
That same year, 2002, He asked an Aboriginal leader.
No! Oh, come on.
No, I'm sorry.
Are you sure we shouldn't take a break?
He was in this country and he asked a leader, an Aboriginal leader, William Brin, in fact, do you still throw spears at each other?
Oh, how did this retirement occur in 2017?
Guys, we're fast forwarding 2012. This is not many years ago. I mean, political correctness has well and truly set in.
Well, truly.
He has said there was a man who was driving a mobility scooter. Obviously, he needs a mobility scooter.
Yeah.
And he asked the man, how many people have you knocked over in that thing?
I'm exhausted.
And then I don't know where to stop, but this is 2013, a young girl who'd survived an assassination attempt by the Taliban for her desire to be educated and go to school. He said to her, oh, children go to school because their parents don't want them in the house anymore. No, I was avoiding the guns. I mean, he's one of the best terms of what a celebration of a career.
I think that's why they congregated at Buckingham Palace, all the PR people like, you beauty! No more bushfires to put out!
Fifi, Dave, Fev and Byron.
Now, guys, I know we work as a team here and I don't want to undercut anyone here in the team, but Nikki Markovics, fake news, okay? She threw some stuff out earlier this morning and I'm going to have to correct her on that. Well, she said Malcolm Turnbull, as we all know, is over in the US now and he's going to meet face-to-face with Donald Trump.
Yes, today.
And they said, yeah, the meeting's all been delayed. And she said it'll probably happen about 9:15. I'm going to stop you there. it's happening right now. We know that.
Wow.
And a lot of people, I mean, yes, you could probably think government always know what's going on, possibly. The UN knows what's going on. No, guys, entertainment has always got its finger on the pulse. We know on radio, we know where everything is happening. We got audio, we got mics everywhere, and you probably heard from news reports, they're meeting on the USS Intrepid, which was an aircraft carrier.
Yes.
But now it's a museum and it sits on the Hudson River, and they're just meeting on there. And because, you know, we got ways and means, we know people over there, Howard Stern, yada yada. And we've actually mic'd up the ship, and I believe actually Malcolm and Donald are actually just peeling away from the party. I think it's about now, I'm looking at the clock, it should be about now, they've actually peeled off to their own private little meeting.
I guess what I'm saying is when you're the president, you can get away with things like that.
I'll pretend I didn't hear that. Mr. President, I would just like to thank you for inviting me to such an auspicious event on this historic and salubrious occasion.
Oh boy, what the hell did you just say? Crap, my advisor said you could speak English.
I can. What I'm saying is I would like to extend my hand in appreciation of this bilateral meeting.
By what now? Whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm not sure what you think that hand is going to go, buddy, but I only tried that once when I was in college. I was pretty drunk.
Okay, why don't we move on to more pressing matters. Initially, let's discuss the phone call we shared early in the year using NBN technology to the node, which is impressive in itself, about the resettlement of refugees.
Oh yeah, refugees. Yeah, your problem with the boat people. Although, you're on an aircraft carrier right now, so it looks like you're a boat person. If you're banning them, you're banning yourself. Oh, Mikey can't go home. No, Mikey can't go home. Come here. Come here.
You're ruining my double blade haircut. It's really for Tom. Get off my
side. Oh, that was a good one. I hope the Russian mics picked up on that one.
Sorry.
Nothing. Okay, let's get serious. You're worried about North Korea, right?
Yes, I believe the greater free world, and more specifically, the Pacific Rim region that this rogue state occupies and the despot that rules it encroaches on everything we hold sacred.
Well, you really do speak fancy. What did you used to do?
Since you probed, I was actually, in fact, a lawyer and a QC.
You're not a tax lawyer. I'm not releasing my tax returns. You can't make me. Fake news. Fake news. Fake news.
What just happened?
Sorry, knee-jerk reaction. North Korea, where were we? I think I'll bomb them.
Well, Mr. President, I think that should be a last and desperate measure.
You sound like my advisors. How about we build a wall?
There already is a wall. It divides Korea.
And does it work? Are there any Mexicans there?
Well, no.
See? Walls work. I knew it. USA. 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 Come on, let's get drunk and prank call the UN. Vlad would do it.
Okay, I want to fit in, so okay. Malcolm will do it.
Woohoo!
Interesting stuff, isn't it?
Oh, that has have to be my highlight of my year and a bit I've worked here. Literally, hot bang.
Fifi, Dave, Fev and Byron.
Boys, you've had much fun and delight this week at the Box family reunion, which happened on Tuesday at the MCG in the MCC committee room. Just 50-odd boxes in a room. Catching up. Cousins, second aunts and uncles, and meeting a lot of people for the first time, or relatives I hadn't seen since I was a kid.
I mean, for us, you know, they all said because Prince Philip is retired, everyone's congregating at Buckingham Palace. I reckon stands about equal. Would it be the same? MCC members room, all the boxes swanning around. Ching, ching, who's got burgundy?
Then yesterday at my expense, you tried to play that little game, guess which box it is, where you lined up three of my relatives to see whether or not I knew who they were.
Sure,
I didn't know Lizzie, one of my great cousins that I've
seen. Which one?
Well, it's funny you say that, Dave, because an email went out to it. We're all now on a group email, by the way.
Oh.
So it's all it's just a big box group email. And my Uncle David, who did a great job organising the reunion, he sent an email to everyone yesterday, and I thought it was lovely because great promotion for the show.
Join the inbox.
He said, you'd love to get in his inbox, Bev. His email was like, most of you have probably already heard on the grapevine, but in case you missed it, that our reunion lunch featured on the radio this morning.
3AW? Oh, no, sorry. It's FM. I don't know if anyone listens to that.
We made press anyway. And he goes into, Fifi was quizzed about it. And she was asked to identify three mystery callers. Anyway, and my favourite part about this, which says how ordinary I am as a niece and a cousin, because you'd think that I'm well placed at the moment to get a sound bite of that and send it all to all to my relatives because I'm part of the show. But my Uncle David's even said, like, if you want to hear it, Google Fifi, Dave, Feff and Byron and get onto the iTunes podcast.
And then they looked at me and Byron in the bathtub.
Yeah, probably. Well, this is it. See, this is the thing, Fez. I'm not lying to you. And he said, you can find it on the podcast. And I read this going, oh, that's really lovely. That's great. Everyone can, oh, no. And then I remembered what we talked about. Like, here's the thing. My dad, I love my dad so much, and I love that he really shows no interest in this radio show. So he doesn't really listen. So I get away with a lot that I don't necessarily want my dad to hear. But now I realise that my dad and my aunts and uncles, and you know when your relatives know you a bit differently to your workmates, I don't necessarily want my dad to hear this. Liz, who when we were growing up was Lizzie, I was saying to her at the reunion, I said, Liz, this is great because we've got names that you can't make fun of. Oh, Fifi, people have a bit of fun at Fifi Box. But she said, oh, no, when I was at school, they all called me Jizzy Box. I mean, there's that. They're going to find the photo of you, Fev, naked with Byron in a bath. These are things my relatives don't need to see if they start Googling this show.
Your entire family's going to lose their membership. MCG doesn't want those kind of people there in the members' rooms, do they? Yeah.
We're out of here. The track I promise you from Chris Brown is coming up. In fact, all your favourite R&B artists from our R&B Fridays Volume 3 will be featured with Buzz next. R&B Fridays right here on The Fox. Have a great weekend. Big footy game, obviously, on Sunday, Fev. I know you were pushing that in your sports report.
Yeah, breast cancer. Wear pink. Get down to watch Melbourne v Hawthorn, MCG. Donate. There'll be tin rattlers out there. And let's make the MCG pink.
Beautiful.
Oh, that'd be nice. I don't know what you're up to tonight. Just flick it on Channel 10, guys. Put it onto the project. Big dog will be on the desk.